discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
There are surely spiritual consequences to becoming the enemy that you are fighting. Being fueled by hatred and fear will lead to guilt, shame, and bitterness. But fighting with a pure heart results in a victorious spirit. These words of hope in the midst of battle, both the physical battles that their author faced in Afghanistan and the spiritual battles we all face, hold a special truth when you discover the incredible journey of their author. Chad Robichaud served 8 deployments in Afghanistan as a Special Operations Force Recon Marine and DoD contractor. He's also a mixed martial arts champion, has served as a special agent for the Federal Air Marshal Service, and has advised the President's administration on veterans care. But this man of great strength has faced some of life's darkest battles, questioning his faith, battling PTSD, and even doubting his will to live. So how does Chad's story bring us such a hopeful message? We find out together today on the road. Chad authors the new book, An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. And a warm welcome to you, brother. It is a real privilege to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me on.
I read the bio. This isn't exactly a run-of-the-mill bio, brother. I think the question that I can't resist asking right off the top, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I just wanted to do something, a purpose, you know, and I think most people in our life, some of us go through our whole life never finding that life of purpose. And I look at my bio, and you're kind of giving me some accolades here for it. I really look backwards and look at someone who was discontent, you know, going from one thing to the next, trying to find that void, that purpose that I was created for. And you know, some of those things I got to do were great things, and others were just, like I said, just complete discontentment, always searching for something. And so I'm privileged to have been part of those things, but I don't think I could ever be more privileged to do what I do now at Mighty Oaks.
That's one of the most interesting parts of your story, and I want to ask you about an excerpt of the book where you address that specifically. But first, just to revisit the beginning of the story, as far as a faith background, Chad, when you were growing up, was God a part of life at your house?
I think culturally, I grew up in South Louisiana, and Catholicism was really, you know, rooted in the culture, and so I went to church on Sundays, and you know, people would have claimed to be a Christian, but I was never really taught what it meant to be a Christian or grow up to be a man of God and serve my life in accordance with God's will for my life. I never really understood what that meant.
Another legacy that your family shared was military service, right? I mean, did it seem completely natural for you to enter the Marines as soon as you could?
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that I would have joined the Marine Corps. My father was a Marine, and you know, he went to Vietnam and served, and he probably faced a lot of things that I faced with post-traumatic stress or depression or anger, whatnot. I mean, he came home and there was a life of alcohol, physical abuse, adultery, and growing up under that life of, you know, being around someone like that, particularly the physical abuse. You know, the siblings get really close, so me and my brother had became very close, and we always talked about joining the military as a way to escape that lifestyle. He was a year older than me. And when I was 14 and he was 15, he was shot and killed. And that was a, you know, tremendous tragedy in my life. It really sent me into a really deep depression, but I had still aspired to fulfill that goal and join the military. And, you know, despite who my father was, him being a Marine, and it was the one thing he was always really proud of, I wanted to be a Marine. And so when I was 17 years old, I found a Marine Corps recruiter named Staff Sergeant Brown. And literally, you know, he gave me a second chance at life, because at the time I hadn't even graduated high school. And I joined the Marine Corps without a high school diploma. I was 17 years old. Being a Marine, like you said, it's a family thing. My son, Hunter, he's a third generation Marine.
Wow.
Marine Corps is a big thing in our family. Yeah.
Oh, well... Just honest to goodness, thank you both for your service. It's amazing to just consider how few, and I've heard the percentage before. You probably even know the answer to this. Is it a correct stat? Less than 1% of the population of the U.S. will ever see military service?
Yeah, I've heard the number I hear is 0.45% of the U.S. population is currently enlisted in the military. So, yeah, 0.5% of the population. And I think everyone knows someone that's in the military. But those statistics are pretty amazing that our nation is defended by such a small percentage of brave men and women.
That's the voice of Chad Robichaud. He's a former Force Recon Marine, an MMA champ, a speaker, the founder and president of the Mighty Oaks Warrior Program's Ministry to Veterans, and the author of An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. Now, chapter one of your book is pretty interesting in itself because I understand that, as you just described to me, the first chapter of this book actually started as a blog post that then became what the internet would describe as a viral Twitter post, right?
Yeah, well, I wrote The Killing Pool is the name of the chapter. I just, the election was happening. I was glued to the television and, as the election was unfolding, and heard so many people saying, I don't like either candidate, right? I have a problem with Donald Trump, or I have a problem with Hillary Clinton. And so there's so many people saying, I'm not going to vote. And that just really troubled me that people thought that because they didn't like either one of these candidates, they couldn't come to a conclusion because it was hard to come to a conclusion of who to vote for. And so I just felt compelled to speak on it. And I woke up one morning, I just felt really stirred. And I really believe God had stirred my heart to write my experiences in Afghanistan, in a particularly interesting event that I got to be involved in, which was the 2004 presidential election.
Yeah,
I was in Afghanistan, and an Afghan friend invited me to his house for the presidential election to unfold, and I was just amazed at how involved these Afghan people were. They were having a party, like a Super Bowl party, and so they were so glued to television. I thought, man, this is how the world is impacted by the leader of the United States of America. Mm. And for people not to know that firsthand, like I got to witness, I want to share it. And I want to share why they were so, because I asked my friend in Afghanistan, why did they care so much? And that's when he took me to see the killing pool and apartment buildings and what the Taliban had done to these people by executing them in this pool, by hanging them from the high dive tower, by lining up people at the end of the pool and killing women and children and throwing them off the top diving platform like bags of garbage and to their death. And these apartment buildings where girls would jump out the windows and the rooftops when the Taliban would come because they wouldn't want to be raped or killed. And so seeing all this stuff firsthand and understanding who the Taliban was and what we were preventing from happening in a place like Afghanistan because of who we elected. I mean, we have to. As Americans, we have a responsibility to vote. And so I wrote this blog, and the presidential administration on the Trump side shared it. General Flynn shared it. Sarah Palin, Governor Palin's a friend of ours at Mighty Oaks, she shared it. And Alan West and General Boykin. And a lot of people shared the blog, and it got a lot of traction. So when I wrote the book, An Unfair Advantage, it was actually made for a great first chapter to talk about my heart.
I mean, if you only have a few moments to read something today, chapter one of An Unfair Advantage is absolutely riveting. You tell the story of that first tour in Afghanistan, and you're taking in, on the one hand, the tragedy of the suffering that you describe, and on the other hand, you're describing the real hope of these people and their profound gratitude to the United States. Each of these chapters tells a story from your career as a warrior, and then on a parallel track shares truth from a biblical warrior. You retell a story that could be pulled right out of a Hollywood script, but is in fact the real thing in the opening of chapter two. Then you're driving along one day in 2004 when you get the sense that a Toyota pickup full of men with AK-47s just might be after you. Can you retell that epic scene with us, sir?
Can I paint the picture in Afghanistan at that time? I was doing some advanced force operations, so we were essentially in a clandestine capacity, trying not to be seen or in trouble, creating any trouble. So I was in civilian clothes, civilian vehicle, and an actual Toyota Prado, which is like a 4Runner. And it was just me and my buddy, and we each had a pistol, so we wasn't armed to get in any gunfights or anything. And this Hilux pickup truck full of, you know, what looked like to be Taliban bad guys were following us. And the road we were on is Jalalabad Road, which is the main road that goes east to west in and out of the city of Kabul, the capital. These guys were loaded in the truck, piled in the back, like you see in some of these pictures. They always have the joke, how many Taliban can you fit in the truck, Hilux pickup truck? And the answer is one more. Pile in this truck. And so we were pretty sure that they were up to no good. And so it's called deviating your route. And I took a right off of Jalalabad Road and made the block. And when I came back on Jalalabad Road, they were still following us. And you know, the tactic's really great to identify somebody's following you. But when it actually works, then it lets them know that, you know, they're following you. So that started a pursuit, and they're chasing us into the city. And I knew the city really well. I felt like I could actually evade them and get away from them in the city. But in any third world country, you know, the traffic's really congested and thick. Right. And that's what the scenario was. And I got to this turn circle called a Masood Circle. It's a really prominent circle in Kabul. And as the traffic congested, I didn't have anywhere to go. And somehow that truck made it through the traffic around us and blocked us off. Having been trained for that scenario before, I did exactly what we're trained to do. I hit the gas and I smashed it in the front of that vehicle to knock it out of the way, and knocked that truck out of the way and got out of that intersection. And there was a policeman that actually tried to stop me. I had like a path out of that intersection at that point. And he's like, 100-year-old policeman in his perfect little uniform. He's got his whistle and he's putting his hand up and he's blowing the whistle at me, beep, 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 trying to stop me. And I just aimed for him, and I started going. And, you know, I always say I love the Afghans because they always jump on the winning team. And he seen I was coming towards him, so he started helping me out of there. He started stopping cars and directing traffic, and he jumped on my side and waved me out of that intersection. And we got out of there, and, you know, I have a pretty good idea what those guys wanted, but I'm glad we didn't stay there to find out. And
Mr. Chad Robichaux is a former Force Recon Marine, an MMA champ, a speaker, the founder and president of the Mighty Oaks Warrior Programs Ministry to Veterans, and the author of An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. We're here on the road today hearing this amazing story of this good man. Ryan Thomas is my name. You were on 8 deployments to Afghanistan, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And you start to deal with these intense panic attacks. Eventually, it led you to a PTSD diagnosis and a departure from active duty with your Marine task force. And this had a pretty profound impact on you, right?
Like when you're in an environment like that, everyone's like just focused on the mission success. Very, very tough individuals mentally and physically. And so it's very difficult to communicate that you're having problems. And in fact, if anybody would have told me they were having problems I was having, I would have thought they were weak. So when I started having those problems, I was scared to communicate them because I thought people would think I was weak. So
sure.
I started off as like this anger and hatred and bitterness and just really intense. I was very intense. And most of the guys I worked with were that way, and it worked really well. Obviously, it didn't work well when I came home and interacting with my family, but it worked well in Afghanistan. And over time, that anger and intensity start turning into this anxiety. And as the anxiety started to take over, I started having some physiological symptoms. My arms would go numb. My face would go numb. I'd feel like my throat was swelling shut, or my chest felt like it had like 1,000 pounds on it. And I didn't know what it was. I suspected it was anxiety, but I didn't want to admit it. And I certainly wasn't going to tell anyone about it. So I just tried to shove it down and push through it. And it worked for a while, but eventually it continued to get worse and worse. And there was some moments where I would forget, have lapses of memory and time. And I would feel like almost out of body kind of experience. And then there was a particular moment where it became pretty overwhelming. And during that time, I couldn't remember a real foggy 2-week period. And particularly the work I was doing at that time and the people I was working with, I knew that I had not only put myself in danger, but other people in danger. So I was felt obligated to say something. And I did. And when I did, I was brought home and I was put before a psychologist who diagnosed me with PTSD. And I was removed from my job. And not told I wasn't going to deploy again. And you know, so a couple of things I was struggling with at the time was, one, obviously the panic attacks and overwhelming sense of doom. If anybody's ever experienced panic attacks before listening, you know what I mean when I say, like, you feel like you're just going to die at any moment. And that's how I felt. So there was that I was dealing with. And then there was the extreme shame and guilt of failure. I felt like I failed what I believed to be the most important mission in the world at that time to me. And so I felt like I let my guys down, and I was completely at a rock bottom in my life, and also this fear, like, what am I gonna do next? I'd always did wrestling and jiu-jitsu since I could probably walk. I was 5 years old to start martial arts, so it had been a big part of my life. I'd already fought professionally in mixed martial arts on the side. And so my wife and counselor were trying to get me to engage in something. And they talked me into getting on the mats and doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which I had already been doing. And they thought it would be good for me to get out and get active. And when I did, I felt like I found the cure. Because I was like, when I was grappling and wrestling on those mats, I couldn't think about Afghanistan.
Sure.
And so I was, and it was good for me. But you could have something good for you and you could abuse it, right? You get a medicine for something that could help you, but you could abuse it. And that's what I did with jiu-jitsu. And so I just engulfed myself into this. And so instead of getting well, I just occupied myself. Mm-hmm. And it worked for a little while. I just stayed busy, and I stayed on those mats 10, 12 hours a day. I booked fights, and I started fighting professionally, and I started teaching. And so I had a lot, tremendous amount of success on the surface. I was winning fights. I became an 18-2 professional fighter. I won a world title belt. I fought on television and all the big shows. And I surrounded myself with all these people that told me everything I wanted to hear, and no one that was really holding me accountable and telling me what I needed to hear, that I needed to actually get well. I was still having the panic attacks. I was still a raging, like, angry lunatic to my family. My home was not a very happy place for my wife and children. And I was very selfish about the way I behaved as a husband and father and just person. And, but here I am with 1,000 students in my jiu-jitsu school, winning these fights and fighting on television and really being lifted up. And my marriage was, during this whole time, was dying to dead at one point. And me and my wife were living in separate bedrooms in our house. And I ended up in an affair and didn't even care, as my wife found out. And we sold our home and filed for divorce and got 2 separate apartments and sat our kids down and told our kids how, hey, everything's going to be better. You're not going to have to hear the fighting anymore. And, everything wasn't going to be better. Like, our kids were devastated. My wife and I had 2 completely different reactions to this separation. My wife went to church, and not on Sunday. She went to church, and she was there most every day, and she would pray for me. And she said she didn't know how to pray for me because she was so angry at me. So she would just pray for me. God, let me see Chad the way you see Chad. Let me love Chad the way you love Chad. Let me forgive him the way you forgave him. Wow. That's what she would pray for me when I had, essentially just betrayed her.
Wow.
And I, meanwhile, was in this apartment alone, thinking it was time for me to, finally be alone and isolate myself. And really, that time alone gave me time to really reflect on my life and look back at the damage I caused, right? I'd always been blaming everyone else around me, right? The whole world was a bunch of idiots, and I was the only one that had it together.
Sure.
Blame my father, blame the military, blame my wife for not understanding. And that time alone, you really look at my life and all these issues and say, you know what? I'm the common denominator. Like, all these things, like, it was me. And it was really a point of work, accepting responsibility. But my resolve of that responsibility was to say, hey, I caused this damage, and maybe I don't want to take my life because to escape my pain, but my family might be sad, but they'll be better off. And so I decided, like, there's a problem, and I'm going to solve the problem because I'm going to remove myself from the situation, and my family would be sad, but they'll be better off. And so I came to that conclusion. There's 22 of our military guys every day that take their life, and a lot of times you think, wow, that's a selfish thing for them to do. But talking in the aftermath to many of the wives and parents, I believe that oftentimes a lot of those guys are right where I was, where they think they're actually doing a good thing for those they love. But the one thing that kept me or delayed me from doing that, and I'd sit in my closet with my pistol and try to decide how I was going to do it, but I knew my kids would be the one that would find me. Really delaying and trying to contemplate how I'd make it look like an accident, and that was that when my wife came to my apartment. She had the divorce papers, and she wanted to speak with me, and I was being a real jerk to her, even though I wanted the divorce. And she asked me a question that just radically changed my life. And there's a reason we're on the phone having this interview. She asked me how I could do everything I did. And, you know, you talked about my bio earlier. And she's seen all the, you know, how hard it always was. You know, like the training was never easy. It was always hard things. And it was always difficult challenges that I was able to accomplish. She's like, how can you do all these things? And when it comes to your family, you'll quit. Those words to me, I mean, it's probably no more soul cutting word to me than to be called a quitter.
Sure.
And I hate being wrong, but I was both right. I was absolutely wrong. She was right. And I was a quitter. I quit on the most important things in my life. I quit on my role as a husband, my role as a father, that young 17-year-old kid that the Marine Corps gave that second chance to do something important with his life. I quit on all those things, including my own health. And it was time for me to make a decision to turn it around. And a couple of things that I had realized at that time was, one, I couldn't do it by myself. And two, I couldn't do it with the people I'd surrounded myself with. And so I asked my wife if there was someone at the church she was going to, some man that could help hold me accountable to this decision to turn things around. So because I hadn't made a faith-based decision at that time. And she introduced me to a man named Steve Toth, who never served in the military. He met me at a Starbucks and had wrote out a plan. I wrote a perfect plan, like how I was going to fix my life. It was a military operational order. and I showed it to him. I said, it's good, we call it in the military, call it a 5-paragraph order. And so I showed him this plan, and he looked at it, and he slid it right back to me before he even read it. And he said, you're going to end up right back where you are. You're gonna fail.
Wow.
And I was offended. I was like, who is this guy? Like, you know, who does this guy think he is? Like, I put all this time into this. I was trying to manipulate him. I was saying all the right things, and he wasn't having it. He told me, he said, if the plan doesn't have anything to do with God, I can't help you, and I'm not going to waste your time or mine. And, you know, that's what I needed to hear, because I had tried everything. And we have a saying at our foundation at Mighty Oaks, when we work with the guys, if what you're doing isn't working, then why not try something different? Mm. And everything I tried didn't work. I tried the pills. I tried the counseling. I tried the jiu-jitsu and MMA. And as much as I love that, you know, those things didn't change my situation. So what I was doing wasn't working. It was time for me to try something different. And so I trusted this man, and he mentored me for a whole year in biblical manhood, and beyond giving my life to Christ on a very authentic level, I was really discovered who it was that God created me to be as a man, and these things that I've been chasing all my life, this purpose and this mission that I wanted to be a part of my whole life, that it was right there in front of me. And the more I discovered, the more I desired to learn more and align my life to being this man that God created me to be. I noticed not only the restoration of my family, but I noticed the symptoms of PTSD and things like that. I started being able to be in control of them. And I think it's real important to say, like, did I still get angry and did I still get anxiety, all those symptoms of PTSD? You know, of course I did. Like, but the way I responded was differently, because I actually had a pattern, a model to respond differently in my life. And what I discovered along the way is that whatever happened to me in my childhood or Afghanistan or whatever happens to any of us in our life, as heroic or tragic or whatever, however that situation impacted us, the reason we end up in the darkest moments of our life isn't because of those incidents. It's because of the choices we made in response to those incidents. We never lose control of that. I had never lost control of the ability to make different choices. It wasn't the incidents of my life that had put me in a position to be sitting in a closet with a pistol in my hand. After I left my family, what led me there was a choice that I made, and I never had lost control of that. I always had the ability to choose differently. And so I started choosing differently. I took responsibility and started choosing differently and aligning my life with being the man that God created me to be.
Amen. Amen. Wow. What a powerful story. What a just amazing story of hope, even in the midst of some of the darkest times of our lives. And Chad Robichaux is a former Force Recon Marine, an MMA champ, a speaker, the founder and president of the Mighty Oaks Warrior Program's Ministry to Veterans, and the author of An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. And sir, just a real pleasure to meet you, to hear your story. And if people want to learn more about you, your ministry, the book, and as well, the Mighty Oaks Warrior Program's ministry, tell us a little bit about where we can do that.
Well, at mightyoaksprograms.org, that's our website, mightyoaksprograms.org. If any veterans are listening, all of our programs are free to veterans and spouses. We've had 1,578 graduates from our program, about half of them on active duty, and many struggling with suicide, at 22 suicides a day. And out of those 1,578 graduates, we've had zero suicides, something we're super proud of.
Wow.
And beyond suicide, guys are doing just amazing things, turning their life around and being the men and women they were created to be. And all of our books are available too, as well as An Unfair Advantage.
Okay, perfect. Sir, it really has been a pleasure. Thank you for your time and keep up the great work, sir.
Thanks so much. God bless you guys.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.